morning.
You.
How you feeling?
Alright.
Alright, cool. Alright, hold on. Let me turn your other shit off.
Yeah, I don't use the video stuff on here, though.
Oh, that's fine. That's no problem. Yeah. How you doing, man? How you doing?
Alright. I'm just tired.
I had a fucking dream about John Kidd last night, man. Like, him telling him if he needs a place to stay, he can kick it on my couch and shit. It was weird.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with him. I don't talk to him that much, but, I mean, I talk to him enough. But I don't want to say anything to him. Just let him take care of what he's got to take care of, you know?
Yeah, I understand.
Sometimes it looks like he's going through some shit, and I don't know. You know, the guy's got a wild imagination. I think, you know, it's probably hard to rein that in with all the stuff that seems to go
on. Look who's talking, man. Look who's talking. By the way, man, it just so happens I'm reading The Invisibles right now. I haven't been able to find it. I had to send out for it to get it.
I work at a comic book shop, so if you ever look for anything.
Holy shit, you read a lot of comics.
Yeah. A lot of it's speed reading, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah, a lot of it's skimming.
I fucking love comics. I'll read that shit all day long.
Yeah, it just depends on what it is. But sometimes I overdo media on purpose. Like I overindulge myself in it to use a divination.
Like just strictly, or do you? So what's your theory behind that? Why does fiction? Do you get what I'm saying? Why does fiction? Why is it such a good divination tool?
Well, did you see that picture that I posted, I think, day before yesterday? I literally found a comic book, and it had, on the ritual I'm doing right now, I'm using pennants as the present, gold balloons as the future, and silver balloons as the past. So, you know, like, pennant flags that hang down, like, at a car dealership?
Yeah.
So I'm using those to signify the present. And I was going through a comic the other day, and I was actually kind of reading this one. I was half-ass reading it. And, the guy goes into a carnival or something, and it's got the pennants hanging down, and it says on the sign on the tent, it says divination by comics. So I mean,
that's insane. No, yeah. But I know. Like I had my own thoughts on it were kind of along the same line too. Like you can pretty much use anything for divination. But comics seem to be extraordinarily potent, but it's kind of like, it's like what, you know, the Mayans, it's pictorial symbols. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's just like a fucking hodgepodge of symbols.
Well, I mean, you got to think about, like, all the things that have to go through a Hollywood movie to get on screen.
Right.
That's where I was disagreeing with you sometimes. I think you could be open the way you are, and it'd be interesting to see where you go with it. But sometimes you got to rein yourself, you got to pull yourself in, like, pull the reins on it. Because I've been in Hollywood movies, and I'm telling you, like, half of that, I would say 80% of what you see in Hollywood movies is just what it is. It's the universe, and it's everything else putting whatever wherever. 20% of it might be conscious, and it's going to be usually in the bigger movies, you know? It's like that thing you were asking Jake about, you asked him, I think it was about Adam Sandler with the 23. Now, I think Adam Sandler's definitely aware that
he has to be, but it's like...
He's aware that he's doing 23, but I don't think he's aware to where you're aware of what he's doing. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Well, there's a unpublished thing that I asked Jake that question, and he said even if people do it intentionally, it's just going to create more synchronicity in other areas that they weren't aware of.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, I like the way that you're using, like, balloons and you're using these pennants because it's almost like these everyday things that make so much sense to draw attention to, though. It's just crazy. I mean, you're a nutty guy. I think that kind of makes people automatically become a little bit, like, weary of if to believe you or not. But
it doesn't matter.
You're validated. You're validated. It's totally... Yeah, it's totally kosher.
You can't worry.
Hold on, Doug's online. Let me talk to him real quick. Yeah. I'm going to add him to this call so we can just chit-chat for a second and figure out how we're going to do this.
Okay.
Add to conference. Yes. Douglas.
Hello.
How are you this morning?
Good.
So I'm wondering if, I mean, I could use my phone, but I just, like, I don't like it because it takes me out of a comfortable space and I'm in a basement.
Right. So. And so what's interesting about this is that we're all in that uncomfortable space because we have the phones.
Yeah.
And then what happens, what has been happening is that after we're, like, uncomfortable for 42 minutes.
Yeah.
And we go back to Skype and we kind of process a little bit for, like, 20 minutes or a half an hour or so. And yeah. We are comfortable again. And so it feels, I don't know, there's, like,
something right about it, about being uncomfortable right. So when the show's going on.
It's part of the trip to feel slightly awkward when we do this.
Yeah, I'm always awkward, so I'm socially awkward. I mean, I'm okay, and the smaller the group is, the better off I am. Years ago, I was different, but not anymore.
So I would say if you got a cell phone, just give it a shot, and it's okay, because they've been turning out really well.
Yeah, I'm just going to check this real quick. Like, I'm going to go online, just check Skype online, and just sure. See what it says, like okay. How I charge it and all that shit.
Okay.
Says, is it all right to cuss every once in a while if it slips?
Will does.
Okay.
I have the podcast listed as, I didn't say it's restricted,
mm-hmm.
And nobody is seeing it, so it doesn't matter. But at some point, if I don't know when they're going to start censoring the internet, or if that ever happens, but you know. Just because once you start restricting content, all of a sudden your visibility goes down. And so for now, it doesn't matter is what I'm saying.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay?
Just be yourself
is fine.
Okay.
You read a lot of Grant Morrison, Chris?
Not really. I mean, enough.
I mean, did you read all of Pop Magic? You had me reading Pop Magic yesterday.
Yes.
I knew that was out there, but I hadn't read it before. I found a copy online.
What are you doing, Will? You're giving away?
No, everything. Oh, by the way, Chris, pretty much anytime you're talking to me, it's going to be recorded. I'm just asking your permission to use that later.
You're good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what else I was thinking about, too, is because you had a bunch of different definitions on your symbol of the balloon.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, like, balloons are pretty much symbolic of thought, right? Because of thought balloons and shit like
that.
Yeah. And speech.
Especially in the comic book world.
Right. Right, right. But it's definitely, like, the symbol is related. There was a reason why they chose the balloons for both thought and speak. It's kind of like, it makes perfect sense. It's kind of like attached to the person. It's like, it's a sigil. You know what I mean?
You're,
it's like
a fucking
thing that emanates from this person that. It's visible like a balloon that has the information you want, just like your little bomb.
Yeah, my problem, I don't know if I want to get into this now, but I don't know if it's a problem, but my big thing is that in my world, all the synchromystics, I guess, or whatever you want to call synchronauts, I wish that everybody could come to agree on a few things. I'm not big on agreements, but... My biggest problem would probably be the way everybody...
Come on in, guys. This is too good. You're giving it away.
It's okay. But my big thing is, like, there's visual synchromysticism. There's phonetic synchromysticism. There's mythological synchromysticism. And then there's, I don't know what you'd call it, real world or logical or scientifical or whatever you'd want to call it, synchromysticism, with quotes around it.
Wow.
And it's like, take the 42 Jupiter thing. Yeah. I use that on my blog. I think it's at the top of Mercury's Messenger, because I become the messenger of Jupiter. But that is a visual connection, a visual synchro. It doesn't make it any less valid to me, because I'm in the sigils, so it looks like a 42. But I think sometimes people, especially when dealing with, like, a newer person that's getting into synchromysticism, when you wind up connecting, like, Jupiter with 42 or something, they don't really get what's going on. And you have to tell them, like, you know, well, it's because it looks like a 42, not because it has anything to do with 42 other than looking like it. You know, I just wish people would agree on at least defining what exactly they're being synchromistic about, you know. It's one of our senses, one of our five senses. I don't know. I guess you could be a synchromistic and you could start smelling stuff, and when things smell like other things, make other things up about it. I don't know. So no, it has something to do with the senses, though, and I think that's where it has to be kind of defined for us.
Okay. I mean, as long as there's been any, it's just another form of esotericism. I mean, basically, you're dealing with the same instruction, you're dealing with the same concepts, and there's never been agreeing factions. Do you get what I'm saying?
No.
The start of Sync has been a little bit more peaceful. But, I mean, now, of course, there are arguments, but I don't think...
Oh, God, you ought to go to my blog and check out all that. There's a guy named Dennis that gets crazy on my blog, man. Calls me a freak and all kinds of stuff and gets mad at me. Says I'm not allowed to cuss because I'm a synchromistic. And,
why do you cuss all the time?
I know, I'm just... Yeah, this guy, this guy's funny. His name's
Dennis.
Well,
that just happened. So, all right. I'm not going to waste any time with you, Myers. Are you still there? No, you are not.
Yeah.
Oh, you are. No, I see you.
Yeah.
Okay, so now...
Well, are you strictly just trying to have synchromistic magic? Like, are you just trying to make syncs happen and appear in front of your... By doing the magic?
No, it's just to increase it.
Just to increase it?
Yeah, because if you like, let's say you make a sigil for yourself, then especially the way you're into the visual structure of sigils, which everything's a sigil.
Hey, I don't want to call, guys. Finally.
Okay. Keep going, Chris.
So especially somebody like you that's really into the visual and everything, looking at everything like a sigil, because it basically is a glyph or a sigil. If you wound up making a sigil for yourself, then those glyphs would be able to find you, so to speak, in the ether of reality, or what you call reality, you know?
Yeah.
And you'd be able to communicate with them, you know, imagine like all of them lighting up when you needed to call them or communicate with them. I'm just trying to give you a visual here. So the reason I use the sync bomb is to kind of like, it's almost like a bomb works. Sometimes I picture it going up, hitting other planets and hitting things, and it just sends light of synchronicity. And what it does is I imagine like I'm like there's gold nuggets and we're panning for gold. And imagine like the more synchronicities you send out, or the more sync bombs you send out, or whatever your sigil is to try to conjure up the synchronicities.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of like gets that pan shaking faster, and then all the dirt falls through, so all the bullshit goes, and then the gold nuggets stay on top. That's the way I look at it, something like that. I never really put it together metaphorically, but something along those lines.
You did well, sir.
You guys ready? You want to do this? We cleared our chat room. We had a whole chat room of people.
Really?
Yeah.
I can't believe people get up this fucking early. This is early for me. I'm a night owl.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to start a show eventually. I just want to figure out how exactly I'm going to do it and where I'm going to do it. But I'm probably going to do it like 12 o'clock at night here. So I think you guys would probably be good for that.
That's the key right there, is to do something that like... works for you.
Yeah. But it's good. I had to get up today anyway. I got some stuff I got to do. I normally wouldn't get up this early to do, so it's kind of like serendipitous anyway. I sleep too much anyways.
You know, there's that old saying about from the Chaos Magicians that says that he doesn't try to pull the apple out of the tree or magically make the apple come out of the tree. He... Mm. synchronizes himself into the place where exactly when he points at the tree, the apple is going to fall.
Hmm.
Or something along those... I'm paraphrasing, of course, but the way that most chaos magicians present their material is that it's more like getting in sync with the world and being in the right place at the right time.
Yeah. I call myself a havoc sorcerer at this point, though. I stopped doing chaos magic for the most part. Okay. I separated myself. I just do my own thing. And it's more sorcery now than it is magic. And that's just like opposing, or not opposing, I don't, chaos magic, what happens is, it, the whole point I got, the whole reason I got into chaos magic, because you do what works. It's like if I pissed on a flower and it made whatever happen, I'd do it, you know? And you start reading some of these chaos magicians' books, and then they start getting, everybody starts getting rules, and then it defeats the whole purpose, and then nobody ever does any magic. And I'm into simple magic. I like doing magic, and if I'm not doing it, then I don't feel like reading about all these, somebody's, you know, rules to how I do my magic or whatever. So I just, at some point I was like, I read about sorcery, and then I was like, you know, if, as long as your intention's good and you know what you're doing, I think sorcery makes more sense, because then I don't try to interfere with other people's will. I like to let other people do their own will, but I do like imposing my will or what I want. You know, magic for me becomes, you know, me doing my will. That's basically what it comes right down to.
Right. Okay.
To me, what I'm getting more and more towards, and what I think is kind of at the core of a lot of the stuff we've even been talking about today, is trying to create this stable thing. You know, I think the more mystical, the more natural, and the more ritualized, like, proper way of doing things is the sand mandala that is erased afterwards, because it's honoring the moment, it's honoring the process, and saying, you know, like, we create this mandala. It's leaving almost like a stamp on space-time itself, and it's not necessary to hold on to that, you know, to cling to
in,
that.
Immaterial, so it's the spiritual ritual is enough. That's really interesting.
It is living life as an art. So right. Ram Dass talks about the same thing, of that everything you do, to do it as an offering to Brahma. So you, when you're washing the dishes, do that as an offering of your consciousness, of the experience, to this higher being. And that's a way to kind of go deeper into consciousness. So you're saying, as I'm washing these dishes, you know, like, I will take the sensation of the warm water on my hands and the reflection, the visual reflection of the bubbles and the smell of the soap or of putrid rotting food, like, that everything, you are actually kind of siphoning it into God's mind as a offering, you know. Similarly with eating food, that you are actually, you don't have to put your food on an altar and let it rot away. That as you eat it, you are offering the experience of, like, consciously eating it, the food, and experiencing it, and slowly, you know, taking your bites and chewing it and tasting it. You're offering the taste and the sensations and everything to Brahma, but you don't want to hold on to it. And I guess one last thing I would add on that yoga, the Bhagavad Gita's thing he talks about, he said that his parents, you know, his mom used to always bring his dad single roses, or maybe it was the opposite, that his father would always bring his mom, like, a single rose on their anniversary. So after the mom died, they were at the funeral, and there was, like, a bunch of roses on the coffin, and as the coffin went past the father, a single rose fell off the coffin and, like, rolled right to the father's feet. So everybody was, like, amazed by the meaningfulness of that synchronicity. But then the conversation quickly kind of turned into, how can we preserve this forever? You know, like, this is proof of this higher thing. How can we preserve this forever? So they said they put the rose in a jar with hopes of preserving it, but then it turned into like this brown, gross, mucky mush, you know? So like, in trying to hold on to the synchronicity and to preserve it and to capture it, it's actually creating this kind of death type state, rather than a more true living influx natural state. It creates a stale kind of tomb. So to tie it together with like the All Watched Over by Machines of Loving Grace thing, I think what on a global scale is now happening is that everybody's experiences are so meaningful. We all pretty much want to have a camera attached to our head all the time so that we can upload every photo of everything we eat to Facebook and every picture and video of every experience you're having so you can relive that. And we're creating this large network to capture all of that information, but it's creating this kind of stale, dead rose in the jar thing, except for this time the jar is the earth, you know? And so like the amount of energy required to run this thing to capture all this collective stuff is becoming like a prison or a tomb-like environment.
Or a labyrinth. Like you said, the rose jar. This is Beauty and the Beast again.
Oh, yeah.
Guys, I gotta wrap this up, but that was lovely. I always love. I really enjoy listening to you, Justin. You're a sage.
Likewise, yeah. And it's nice to talk to you, Will. I hope maybe to meet you in real life at some point.
I would love to, man. I think that gave me a lot to think about. I don't know. I always thought it was weird that your last name was the same as mine. I'm really enthused about what you did with the Sync book, and I think that you added a special something to it with your artwork.
Yeah, it was. I'll be curious to tell you guys sometime of all the syncs about Alan's blog and stuff. I think it would be a bit too much to go into in an interview, like we were doing earlier. But yeah, there was just like a crazy, just insane amount of. He pretty much could have been writing exactly about like my life over the past week, before I discovered his blog, to where
did
I was.
Did you
like,
exist before? Maybe he did write you into
he
existence.
Wrote me. Yeah.
Be careful. He'll write you out.
Yeah. But no, I'm in the portal. I'm in the portal now.
Well, we have to come to the portal. This is driving me crazy. We'll get the whole team to San Francisco here pretty soon.
Yeah, it's a huge house. It's like this castle-type house. Can you see me on the video at all?
No, I can't.
No, I see Doug. Oh. It said Doug's. I got Doug's on the video because you have, like, the subscription or whatever, Doug?
What's that?
Oh, never mind.
I'm yeah, he has a Skype subscription.
Yeah, you have
a... Well, I signed up for the trial of group video.
Oh, that's cool.
Okay.
So I guess, yeah, anyways, I saw you for a split second right when we started, Justin. That was enough, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, dude, it would be a pleasure to meet you, more than a pleasure. I mean, like I said, dude, I'm not kidding. Like, I think that there's a lot of opportunity here, man. And
well, it's funny because when Justin came into my life, I thought it was like somehow connected to you, Will. Like, you guys both came from the South, and it's like, oh, of course, you know. You know, it's the Wizard of Oz. All these things, instead of seeing the same character, you know, in reality and in the dream, it's like there's only one, you know, these different characters that shift into different people.
Yeah, I have that same experience, too. Eerily so, oftentimes, that you're like, this is the same person.
Right, this is the blank in my life, and now this character is manifested in this person.
Right.
And then
Kevin Halcott has my brother's first name. So for some reason, they're very similar in their belief systems, and so I kind of categorize them as Kevin Halcott as like almost a brother to me. And then there's like Stephen Wilner, which is my name. My first name is William. And he, like, I almost discredited Wilner when I first saw him, but then I had this vivid dream. So as soon as I had the vivid dream, I knew I was involved in Sync. But my middle name is Jacob. My middle name is Jacob, and that's the same first name as Jake Kotza. And I didn't really pick up on that until he said something. When me and Jake first talked on Skype, he goes, "Your middle name is Jacob." And he goes, "Ha, ha, ha." Because, of course, that's his real name. But it's like that. I mean, it's almost like reality peeks around the corner like fucking Reggie Watts says. And it's like, "Ha, ha." And then, like, you know, "This is just a game. This isn't even real. We had this all planned out." And then peeks back around and you go into daily life again where you have to drive in bad traffic.
Well, yeah, and maybe in summation of, like, I got to get off here too, but not only in the sync book, you know, like I hid little codes on the cover. In other design stuff, I try to either like hide when the opportunity presents itself, hide so-called Easter eggs or like designers' little things. So they're, you know, video games are notorious for doing the same thing of that. The
designer... I totally found the penis on the cover.
No, there's no. But.
All right, well, that's 2 hours. We were just talking for about 2 hours, so that's good. I guess we should...
Go ahead, finish your thought, Justin. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so with designers, they would hide things. Yeah, and Disney definitely would do that. They would hide weird little things in there. So I almost feel like some of the synchronicity things are almost hint at a designed life experience.
But I think that people go to two different extremes. Like, some people say that it's all on purpose, and some people say that none of it's on purpose. I personally think there's a middle ground. And I like what Jake Kotza said to me one time. He was like, sometimes when people put it in there intentionally, it amplifies it, and then they get a whole bunch of stuff that they didn't intend to.
Yeah, definitely.
But you're also speaking about God, right, Justin? That God's got this wicked sense of humor, and he likes to use Easter eggs, of course.
Yeah, that he... it's like it's the Joker. It's the cosmic kind of joke that, that we to some extent designed this. You know, that's what I think was interesting with the myth of the labyrinth was Daedalus created the labyrinth and then was cast into it himself. So it kind of gets to this archetypal idea of a creator god creating this, maybe even for some higher god. And then being cast into his own creation.
That's good. I'm sorry. I just got this mind blast, though, because we were talking about the Titanic and Leo being the beast. He's also in Inception, which is all about labyrinth, and actually stars Ellen Page, whose name is Ariadne, which was like Daedalus's wife, I think.
Oh, really?
Well, no, so and the king's daughter, King Minos's daughter. So
no, Ariadne is the one who designed the labyrinth, and then she was also Dionysus's wife
in Inception. But in the myth, she gives Jason the thread, you know, and then he carries her golden thread through to the center so he can get back out.
So once again, it's beauty who leads out of the labyrinth, then.
Right.
And even within that movie, you know, he was like, draw a maze that would take me a certain amount of time to get out of.
Right.
And she starts out drawing the square mazes and then quickly kind of draws
and she the actually circular, gets like, him labyrinth. Out of the maze, too, because she's the one who gets him to kill the shadow or his dead wife, whose name is Mira or something like that. It's basically, wow, that's messed up. We covered a lot of ground today, gentlemen.
We did.
Yeah, yeah.
But we need to cut it off.
Justin, all of this has been recorded. I will go through and just erase that little bit that we had a hiccup in. But if you'd like, go ahead and give your address for your website.
Sure, yeah. My website address is justingraymorgan.com. Middle name G-R-A-Y, Morgan, justingraymorgan.com. Some of the work on there is a little old. Some of it I probably should do the sand painting treatment and give it a flush or a little wipe to clean out. But I'm always interested to hear from people. As the sync book has kind of proven, you know, like lots of times, if there's a good opportunity to work with other people on cool projects, I'm certainly up for it. It's been... great talking to you guys, and nice to meet you via Skype, Will and Doug. I'm glad we made it out of the wilderness up in the Cascades after our hard trek up into the depths of the wilderness, up on the little glaciers and whatnot.
Yeah.
All right. Well, gentlemen, have a great day.
Okay? Well, I look forward to hanging out with you again sometime in the future.
Yeah, definitely, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks for having me on and stuff, and good to just to talk to you guys.
Yeah, sorry for getting you up so early, but...
No, it's fine. I'm going to go take a nap.
Me too. Peace, y'all.
Okay. All right. Take care, guys. Bye.
Yeah, I'm here.
Are you at the bus depot?
Hello?
Are you at the train station? There's all this...
Sounds crappy?
Well, it's not crappy. It just sounds like there's a lot of motion around you.
Yeah, I'm trying to find my my mouse plug. I think I left it upstairs. Does it sound any better now?
It sounds great.
Okay.
Will, I don't know... He's folding his laundry or doing his dishes or something practical.
Well, you need that to ground yourself sometimes. This is why I go to work, you know? And, like, people don't understand. Like, I get at work and I'll be, like, you know, just going through stuff and they'll be talking to me about something and I'll go, look, this is kind of like my time to get away. But then it always sucks me back in because I find a comic book with something on the front of it and I go, ah. That's why I'm glad I found Twitter. Because then I just take a picture and I feel like I've got it out there and I'm good to go with it.
Yeah, that's the reason I like Twitter too, because like for a while there, I mean, it's kind of burdensome, especially if you're into personal sync like I know you are. They pile up too quick. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so you're like, oh, like I have this great post I can make out of this. But then you like get fucking three posts behind and you're like, do you still have like all of this shit you're carrying behind you you want to share with the world? But Twitter allows you just to fucking put that shit out there.
Yep. I like the picture option, but I hooked it to my Facebook, so it winds up showing up in Facebook, too.
See, it's all a matter of temperament. You're basically a personal sync type of guy. That's, like, your focus, and other people are on, you know, categorizing it in movies and shit like that. I mean, I experienced personal sync, I mean, as you can tell.
I do a little bit of all of it. I did do a little bit of all of it. You'd have to check out all of it.
I've seen you for a while. It's just that your blog, you had so many pictures on your first, like, blog. Your first blog, the one that was private, never updated. So I never knew when you, like, put something new.
Are you talking about the old Order of the Stars?
Old Order.
Oh, so you were a part of that, huh?
Yeah, I watched it a couple of times. Cool. But it was a private blog, and what would happen would be, like I never, like I said, never, it wouldn't update on my feed at the bottom. So I'd have to keep logging on to your blog to see what was going on, and I never knew, I would have to check it every day, and
Well, that was kind of like, I don't know, man. I tried to explain before, I think I don't know if I explained it in the sync book well, but, you know, when I was getting into all this, I was getting into knowledge, I guess, in general, and I picked up some books, and they were kids' books, and I lost all my friends, and I was getting high all the time, and I was just reading these books, and, like,
going, holy shit. And I was making all these connections about the television and stuff. And I start, and then I got in the movies and I started telling people about it. And then, like, I don't know if you've ever seen how it almost looks like a ritual I'm a part of in Cecil B. Demented. It basically, Leisha Witt looks pretty much like ISIS. She's got a torch in her hand. She's next to me. And it wound up being like, this was that. Was it after that? I had a really bad anxiety attack, or during that, because I had all these friends that would never call me, but then I got in the movies and they were like, "Hey, what's up? What are you doing?" And it was really weird, to be honest with you, because you know, shit, Big Daddy was on television about an hour before I had my anxiety attack, so that's just weird synchronistically for me. Just connecting it with the Adam Sandler thing you guys are into.
Adam Sandler's fucking weird, dude. I'm telling
you. Well, it was after that, I remember, you know, when I had my anxiety attack, Toy Story was on. And I remember that was just, it was weirding me out really bad. And I couldn't watch it for years, but it was really funny when I wound up meeting Buzz Aldrin and stuff, because I'm like, what, you know, there's something here with all this. And I actually had a friend, one of my first friends that was a celebrity, his name is Woody, and he's from a group called Drew Hill. They did that, remember the Wild Wild West song for with Will Smith? You remember that?
The Wild Wild West?
Yeah, remember that song?
Wild Wild West.
Yeah, my friend Woody. Wild Wild West. Yeah, my friend Woody's actually the singer in that. He actually quit. He quit during that video because he had some kind of religious thing experience, and he turned into like a super Christian. So, but I'm just,
movies are always important like that. That's why I like movies. I mean, I know that it's kind of a fixation, but I just picked on that. I was just like, I'll just stick to movies because everybody experiences that, where it's like, you know, Robert Anton Wilson, when he's dealing with the Pooka and he watches Harvey and it almost directly talks to him. That's what Valis is about, is he being validated with personal experiences through cinema. I saw this quantum physics name, Alan Wolf, I think it is professor something. Dr. Quantum, that fucking guy.
I like him to a degree.
He did this. I saw this interview he did where he was talking about doing ayahuasca, and then he got on a plane and he went to the wrong city, and there was a camera crew who met him at the bottom, took him to watch this movie, and the movie that they showed him was everything that he had just experienced on ayahuasca.
I don't do drugs.
With the synchronicities, though, Bill Cooper, the guy who did Conspiracy Theory, the first paragraph says that he experienced a whole bunch of synchronicities. To me, synchronicities happen whenever you're fucking around with your internal meaning of the world. When you're seeing the world in a different way, it kind of produces, like, I don't understand why, but that's just what I experienced.
Well, I think that synchronicity and truth, if we look at those as two goddesses, which I do quite often, I think that they're directly related and they have a strong relationship. And that's why, I don't know if you've ever seen my personal sigil, but I put truth in it. That's what comes off of it. It looks like a witch or a devil stirring up a pot, and it says truth across it. And it's me stirring up the truth. You know, that's what I like to do. I used to be a quote unquote truther in the early 2000s. But my point is, there was a point, I don't know if you ever read that Middle Sea post I did, but at some point I had an experience where I started seeing red eyes in people.
Yeah.
I had this, and I thought I was going to hell. It was really fucking wicked. And in a bad way, because I thought I was dying for everybody on Earth's combined sins and stuff. But,
You got a Messiah complex.
Well,
This
was in 2000. So, I mean, it might have been just a combination of a lot of things. I was only on weed at the time because I don't really do anything else. I have in years. But I remember, but it was after I discovered the Hourglass Solar Nebula, which looks like an eye. But this was like stuff I was kicking on the movie set. So I always wonder how much of that stuff carried over, you know, in the consciousness, because movies became a lot weirder for me. But I think it might have had something to do with the whole 1999-2000 thing, because when we filmed Cecil B. Demented, it was in December of 1999.
Yeah.
And when I went in the mental institution the first time for that, it was a misdiagnosed anxiety attack. And when I went in there, it was late December of 1999. So I have a feeling that, and I wasn't paying attention to the world, to be honest with you. Like, I wasn't aware of it as I am now, because I was so introverted. So, but I think that as like as above, so below kind of way, it was there was a lot of things because I think sometimes so deeply, I think it was affecting me a lot more than it would affect anybody else on a on a spiritual level, I guess. You know, just that whole fear of like, oh, here comes 1999. And I almost feel like, you know, 2012 reminds me of that, but I'm glad that I'm aware of my surroundings because I don't think that it will control me like that or have the effect. But I think that's where I would disagree with like some kind of hippie that was totally tuned out to everything, no matter what it is. You know, they're just tuned out. I don't do that. I don't pay attention. There's something to be said with just being enough tuned in so you can at least gauge where the world's at. Even if you guys are like doing like you're doing, looking at movie posters or whatever and trying to figure out something, it's better than just like, you know, riding on a boat, sipping on some imported beer and thinking that you're enlightened. I don't know. You know. What? But you know what? Real quick, I just got, hold on, let me reach for this. I don't do drugs. I don't tell anybody to do it. You do what you want, but I like to do all my shit natural, but quote unquote. But it was funny. I got a collection of DVDs came in my brother's store, or a collection of comics, and there was this fucking DVD thrown in there with that shit that you guys always talk about. The AYAH. I'm not gonna butcher it. What's that shit called?
Say that again.
Ayahuasca. Yeah.
Ayahuasca. Okay.
Yeah. This DVD came in there. My brother threw it at me. He was like, here, take this. And it says The Shaman in Ayahuasca, or whatever the hell that shit is, A Journey to Sacred Realms. And it's got this fucking kid on it, and he's half cheetah. And he's got like, he's like half lion, half cheetah. And he's got like feathers in a crown. And I haven't even opened it. It's still sealed. And it says Journey to Sacred Realms. And it's from 2011. It's a documentary about that shit. I don't know. I just thought that was weird because I'm not into that at all. I doubt I'll ever do it. Hey, listen to this. Approximately 72 minutes. I swear to God, dude, I'm not lying. I think I'm going to give it a watch eventually just to kind of get what the hell it is. But I don't, if somebody can have a religious experience or an experience in general on drugs, I think that's cool. But me, I want to be able to have my grandmother experience what I experience if she can, you know, without doing anything. So that's kind of why I'm the way I am, you know. Let's put it this way. If the person that can't handle drugs can't experience a spiritual enlightenment or a spiritual experience through synchronicity, then I would feel selfish if it was something only I could attain.
I think if you can get to the same spot, see the questions that you ask on synchronicity, well, that's are very common to the state of mind that you're in when you're on hallucinogenic drugs or whatever. I don't think that it's necessary. I think that
it'll get you there quicker.
Well, yeah. I mean, synchromysticism is almost a study in how to train your mind to be in that state of mind without having to take anything to put you in that state of mind. Yeah. But you experience the synchronicities a lot, or a lot of people experience the synchronicities when they're on the drugs. They think everybody's talking about them, or they think everything is lining up to whatever's going inside of their head.
Well, the first time they took me to the mental institution when I had the anxiety attack, I didn't know what anxiety was, an attack was. I didn't know any of that. I had the anxiety attack. I honestly think my brain died for a good couple seconds because my hands went like all Nosferatu and shit. And I met a doctor later that told me the only time he ever seen somebody's hands like that is when they were dead. So, I mean, I do think that it's a possibility. I killed my brain because I was so bored with the world.
Right.
But when I went into the mental institution, I guess I went into the hospital first, Franklin Square, they injected me with something. And then they started asking me all these questions. And one of the questions they asked me was, does the television talk to you? And I thought it was like a trick question. And they were asking me, like, does sound come from the television? But they were literally meant, like, does the TV talk to you? And I was like, what do you mean? And the rest is history. I was in the mental. It only lasted for a day because once I got into the, you know, once I got calmed down, I realized just something weird happened. But I don't think it was just a simple anxiety attack. I think it was a lot of other things. And whatever I believed at the time, I was kind of like you're saying, like the Messiah thing. I remember literally feeling like that, you know. And but it might have been a chemical imbalance as far as whatever produces spiritual enlightenment. There's this one kid, I can't remember his name, but he's in a documentary, and he basically produces that chemical that gives you like any religious or spiritual experiment, and he gets so much of it, he just starts crying, and he thinks he's God, and he starts crying about everything. And like the doctors are sitting there, and they're going like, wow, what, can we say that, like, you know, this kid's damaged, or, you know, this is wrong, because everybody looks to experience these feelings, and he just experiences a lot. So in a way, it's really kind of cool, and we shouldn't be shitting on him, you know what I mean? And that's kind of how I feel even about my former self. Like, I don't want to shit on myself too much where I go like, oh, you had a Messiah complex. You thought like you were going to die for the world's collective sins. Like, you know, you thought you were some Gandhi, John Lennon type. I'm not like that anymore. I'm actually really bitter and mean for the most part. But I don't want to let that, I don't want to look at it like that, and I don't want to let it affect me, to be honest with you, anymore, to where I let it hinder my spirituality, I guess, or put some kind of lid on it, or, you know, where I'm looking at everything like I'm George Carlin, you know. It I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, to a certain degree. I mean, are you in this for a spiritual journey?
Yes. Yeah, I'm into all of it for that. But I also believe in the next world, you know. So have you ever seen the statue that looks like me?
Yeah, I saw a couple of different things that you put up that look like you. I don't know if it's the statue. I saw something that had to do with Mercury that you said looked like you.
Yeah, that's a picture from 1555. But there's a statue. It's about 4,000 years old, and it's called the Everyman statue.
Oh, yeah.
And it's in I found it in a documentary called Magical Egypt. I don't know if you ever watched that. It's in – I can't remember what part it's in, but it's in one of the parts of Magical Egypt. And it's basically I think his name is, I want to say John Anthony West. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's in a lot of documentaries. He was in that one in the 90s about the Sphinx, where he started talking about the Edgar Cayce stuff and like the, you know, the thing being underneath the Sphinx and how the Sphinx was older than they ever thought. And it was actually eroded by water instead of sand. So how's that possible? So it has to be older and all this stuff. But he's kind of tied to the secret, which I don't like that he's tied to the secret. But he's got they got two documentary series. One's called The Great Work. I don't really recommend that too much. And that's kind of like the secret-ish. Yeah. And there's also Magical Egypt. But Magical Egypt's insane. I mean, it's got Lon Milo Duquette in it. I don't know if you're familiar with him. The guy that, the Lee Wright guy.
Yeah, he's the Crowley.
Yeah, he talks about like lucid dreaming and stuff. He's in it, so it's pretty cool. But it's all about how Egypt, you know, they believed that they were trying to keep their collective spiritual individual energy, you know, as that one person to get to the next world. And that's what they were trying to set up, you know, so they could remember.
So that's what I was trying to get you to talk about a little bit earlier was like, so there is a purpose, and that purpose of right now is to get to the next world?
Yes, 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 yes.
Could you explain that a little bit?
It's basically synchronicity, like, will send me sometimes really profound stuff, and then I got to figure it out for myself. The same way if you get something profound, you should, instead of like, it's like I pissed a bunch of people off recently because I said that Christopher Knowles quote about, you know, it being a game and how it's not a game and you can make it into some kind of stoner's game. And I'm just trying to, like, what's it called? I'm trying to rattle something in people enough to where they start thinking about it, even if I wind up pissing them off, to where we, you know, we have to get to a point where we go, okay, we have to figure out what these mean. Because most of us, we get so many synchronicities. It's like Will says, it was that Will earlier that said he like gets, you know, so many posts behind, and then that's why Twitter becomes a nice thing.
Right.
But when we start seeing all these patterns that we know are for us individually, then it's okay to categorize them or shoot them out to people just to show what's going on. I think that's fine. And I think there can be fun in that, you know. But I always hope that somebody else can latch onto that and maybe go, oh, this means that for me. And then I can kind of go, well, maybe it does mean that to them. Does that matter to me or not? Or can I use that? Or I'm trying to open up doors with it, not close them. So I'm always open to whatever anybody else has to say about symbols, and that's why I try to make the balloon one kind of vague. But I still want to put my things out there just in case that makes sense to anybody. But
so then to get into this next world, is it more of a Well, what quest? You have to go through the quest to reach it, like to get out of the maze, or is it?
No, what I'm saying is, I think we, you know, there's in astrology, a lot of astrologers, there's certain sects of astrologers that believe that when an individual comes back each time, not necessarily reincarnation, but like, say each person on this earth right now had to set something right or set something straight. So you as an individual have to figure out what it might be that you need to make right in the world. And it doesn't have to be saving the world or saving everybody. It could be something, you know, I don't know. It just might be something like maybe you need to open up people's minds to one thing, just one particular thing. It could be that simple, which it's not simple, but I mean, for somebody like, you know, us that experienced a lot of synchronicities, it might be that simple, viewed as that simple for somebody else. Like maybe my wife, for example, maybe her whole point to be here is to show that you don't get frustrated by your children. You know, that you really don't have to get frustrated. You really, it could be as quote unquote simple as that. And until somebody fixes that one thing, it's going to keep recycling like that. It's going to come back. Somebody else is going to have to try to fix it. But this is how we evolve spiritually, I think, through different people fixing. And I don't think you need to be an antichrist like Jack Parsons felt, because I think that's what I get from him. I think he thought he needed to be an antichrist. And see, this is where I don't buy into like the Taoist view or the fundamental religious view, because it winds up doing that, you know, black and white, yes, no, right, wrong.
I think Taoism does the opposite of that. I can see where you say it. I mean, it just
it's still about black and white, you know.
Well, you know, yeah, what I mean? But it's transcending the black and white. It's right. It's understanding that the black and the white are a necessity, and being able to discern this is black, but it's just as good as white.
Yeah.
Even, you know, it's basically learning how to be the shining light in a dark time, because you're always going to have people.
Or it's being the dark one in the light time.
Well, it's all about.
Yeah.
Well, Jung was trying to say that we don't have consciousness without, I mean, so like when we're a child, we're experiencing the world more like your monkey man that we're talking about, where there isn't any separation between experience and consciousness.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's only through creating these black and white poles.
Well, you just said it right there. You just separated two things. You said like the outward world and the conscious world. So you just turned into a Taoist right there. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with Taoism. That's not what I'm saying.
No, but so what I'm trying to say is that I think Jung was trying to say we don't have our human experience of consciousness unless we experience the opposites. That
you can't beat yourself up about something. You don't have. I don't think you have.
Well,
you
so can learn. That's the interesting question, because talking about purpose and point, where Jake and Jim are making these monkey videos. I mean, is this where evolution is heading? Are we trying to get?
I don't know. We might be,
you know, out of our heads and back to the jungle, climbing trees.
We might be de-evolving, though.
That's right. Exactly right. Is that
that's like de-evolution? You know, like Devo, like the band Devo.
Yeah, yeah.
I posted a bunch of stuff
in that video. In the monkey video, presumably. I mean, and there's a definite. Like if you just take Mario Brothers, the Twin Towers get disintegrated, and then the man is turned into a monkey. There's like a de-evolution.
But here's my point.
But is that
here's my point though, and I gotta do this through synchronicity. There's a guy, I don't know if you ever got into him, Wilhelm Reich.
Yeah, I know who Wilhelm is, the sex guy, organ energy.
No, not Wilhelm Reich. What am I thinking? Oh, God, what is his name? Now I got his name wrong. What's the guy that got put the eye on the dollar bill, on the back, in the phoenix on the dollar bill? Shit. Fuck, what's his name?
Is it Weiss?
Weiss, yeah, something like that. I'm trying to think of what his name is.
The founder of the Bavarian Illuminati? That guy?
No, hold on. I'll find his name real quick. I don't know. It's early in the morning. Hold on. I'll find his name.
Maybe early in the morning. I bet you it's 12.
Here we go. I got it.
Noon.
12:47 out there.
It's noon, Chris's time. That's early for him.
Yeah. It is for me. It's Rorik. Nikolai Rorik. You ever heard of him?
No.
Okay, he looks a lot like Robert Anton Wilson, so it's really funny. But he's the one who tried to put the Phoenix on the dollar bill and wound up putting the Eagle on there. He's the one who came up with the design of the dollar bill. He also is the one that I think it was Roosevelt. One of the presidents, I can't remember, it was probably the 33rd degree Mason. Was that Roosevelt? Sent him to find all these crystals, this crystal cave in America that was supposed to hold like energy in the crystals and information. He's also the guy that went out to like the Himalayas, and I don't know, you got to look him up. But my friend was I had sent his death number to my friend because my friend kept seeing number 73, and the guy died at 73, or he passed to the next world at 73. So that's how I contact these spirits, through their number that they passed. And the day I sent my friend all the information, he didn't wind up reading it. He wound up reading it later. But it's like sometimes you got to like have all these sinks pile up and you got to throw them at somebody and go, here, like, you think all this is happening for any other reason, but I'm trying to show you. Because I got enough stuff to think about myself. I try to pass it on to other people when I think that they might be up for it. Anyway, I get a book at work and I open it up. And this is something I want you guys to think about. So I get a book up. And I open it at work. I can't remember. I got it over on my bed. It's called, it's another one that had some destruction shit on it. And I open up the first page and the Twin Towers are there. And there's a 73 written on the Twin Tower. On the, I can't remember, the right tower or whatever. And I go to myself, okay, I just read Promethea the night before. And it's the one where she's flying into the South Tower. And she's trying to take the chick because the South Tower is a medical building, and there's Caduceus on the side. So this is just me figuring out things synchromistically, is what I'm saying, how I see the world synchromistically. So since I become Mercury, or I have that in common with the archetype, the Mercury archetype, with Promethea has the Mercury archetype via the Caduceus, she says to the girl, some symbols never change, she knew where the woman wanted to know how she knew that was a hospital. It's because the Caduceus was on the side. And she's like, some symbols never change. The symbology, she always can speak to you. So then the next day I had seen the 73 on the same tower. And then I opened up the book, and the book's actually after 9/11. So, but it takes place, there's like some kind of war in like the early 70s. So the Twin Towers are still there. But everybody's using the towers as sanctuary. So like, but there's different levels to the towers, but like even the Empire State Building's a tower. You get what I'm saying? You get what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
So the same way, there's a thing I do, I don't know if you guys paid attention, but we had, Baltimore has a World Trade Center. We have one. And I did a couple posts being silly, but I wasn't really being silly, where I put the video from Spice Girls, when two become one. And what I'm saying here is, the two towers got knocked down. I don't care how they got knocked down. But let's say I'm trying to give you my experience so you can understand from my point of view. So the two towers get knocked down. My ex-girlfriend to me was number 16. That's how I got in numbers via pagers back in the 90s. So I used 23 as my pager call. She used 16. So 16's the tower card, and you got the red eye on it. And I had seen red eyes in my friends. One red eye, and I can't remember if it was the right side, which it was really cool the other night. I don't do drugs anymore, and I actually saw a blue light in a girl's eye for about a minute, which was really fucking cool. I know she didn't see it. It was just me, because sometimes I see different colors, but it's been a while since I've seen anything. But it's like a reflection. I think anybody could probably get this, and I think some people get it and misinterpret it. I think it has to do with hourglass solar nebulas or hourglass nebulas.
Yeah, I heard you talking about all that stuff on the last one.
Yeah, you'll have to look into that yourself and kind of get what I'm getting at. And I think maybe you'd even be able to experience it if you open yourself up to it. I don't even know if you'd want to. I mean, like, who knows? Maybe your mind can deal with it better than mine. My point is, so the towers come down, and that was like at a time where I was really depressed. It was after I had seen the red eye thing and everything. So in a way, my as above, so below, I'm like, I'm part of that somehow. And the same way, even somebody like Alan thinks they're a part of it because of their fiction they were writing, you know, not necessarily a part of it, but we're all a part of whatever happens around us, you know? And, so here in Baltimore, I was kind of like joking originally because I was fucking with the Keanu Reeves thing with the Sync Winnipeg, and I was kind of like being a dick at the time. But somehow I wound up finding out that they're going to, on the 10th anniversary of 9/11, they're going to put steel into the World Trade Center here in Baltimore. And I was using that to like sink Baltimore. And then I'm like, what the fuck? So like, even when I do my Illuminati, which is totally ridiculously funny, there winds up being funny sync. So it's really funny sometimes. I like to split it up. It's like having split personalities. That's why I have so many of them. But anyway, so on the 10th anniversary, they bring a piece of steel from three pieces of steel from the original World Trade Center. We get a piece of the Pentagon and a piece of the crash, the one that crashed in Pennsylvania. We're the only site in the whole entire world that gets a piece of every single thing. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
No other place, Baltimore, no other place gets it, okay? So I'm like, I'm going to go down here. Well, first things first, I remember one time about 2-3 years ago when I used to have the secret blog and all, like the where I was scared to share experiences almost. I was skeptical of sharing. That's why I never told anybody about the red eye stuff. I was reading it and nobody would respond to me. And I was like, if they can't respond to me superficially about me seeing these red eye sinks, like, part the Red Sea, then I'm not gonna like tell them I saw red eyes before because they don't deserve to know. You know, that's kind of the way I was thinking. And you know, just being a dick, I guess. But when you experience stuff and you have to go through like some emotional fucked up shit, whether it's true or it's just your reality, you still have some kind of like righteousness about you where you're like, well, they're kind of like being free associating with this stuff, and I know I've lived some of this stuff.
Yeah.
And you're going to take it a little bit more to heart. That's all I'm saying.
I've had plenty of personal experiences. It's just interesting because, I mean, the way that I view you is that you had like your own mythology about what this stuff was in your head. Yeah. And then
it still is.
On synchromysticism, and you're like, well, I can definitely see where I'm on the same thread. You know what
but
I mean?
This is what I'm trying to tell people, that if you're going to be into it, let's at least go out and meet some of these celebrities and stuff when they show up in your town, or at least pay attention to it. That's all I usually kind of am getting at with that stuff, you know?
How many conventions do you go to?
I have to work them for work. I don't even, like,
these people at comic books?
It's happenstance. I'm just there because they're there.
See, I don't think people understand that. I think people just see you posting your face everywhere.
No.
But I kind of see you as almost like a fucking sink planker. Do you know what a planker is, right?
Yeah. There was a point where I looked at it as like stealing their souls, you know, like a part of them.
Yeah.
There was a point, but there was a point where I realized that, I'm already an actor. I have a Screen Actors Guild card. I'm one of them, you know?
I'm one of them.
You know,
I am the enemy.
I am a star.
I tried to explain that before, but what I'm saying is like, you know, they're like,
it's two worlds. Let's put it, there's the stars and the regular people.
I don't separate the two.
It's interesting though, because that's what's coming out of Winnipeg is that's.
Yeah,
going into the theater and becoming.
I don't agree with that. Let's put it this way. If you think I'm crazy, right? And
we're all crazy, Christopher.
I'm just saying, if somebody were to think I'm crazy, I mean, like, there's so much stuff I don't share because I just don't have the time, but. It's easier talking, but that's why I want to do my own show. But I don't want to talk about myself.
So for your piece, it was so much fun because just the style reminded me of a character from a Philip K. Dick book. You know, like there was this. Philip K. Dick loved his character and believed what the guy was saying, but just to try and say that to
out loud seemed crazy.
Right, to normal consciousness, it sounds nutty.
Yeah,
super nutty. It's so fun.
I don't know if I'm ever doing videos anymore. Like, I don't know if I'm going to put videos together like I used to with the yellow balloon. It takes too much of my time. But I'll give you this. Like, there's a lot of weird things I noticed with the Hamilton thing. I'm in a movie called Hamilton where I'm the main star. And there was just there's a lot of weird ones. I noticed that because I was in a show called Young Americans. And the guy's character that I keep walking past, I'm an extra, and I keep walking past him. And every time I walk past him, it's not many times in the show, but somebody yells his name, Hamilton, like that. And I'm in a movie that's totally not related called Hamilton. And then I meet Logan Lerman from Butterfly Effect and, you know, The Patriot and all those movies, and Percy Jackson. And I meet him in a movie, and it winds up being... the 127 thing, Which is where I get the 127 number from. I remember it's a 125. It's the same number my SyncBook piece starts on, I think. From that, it looks like the Twin Towers behind me. I wind up being a silhouette. I was supposed to be a bigger part, but it looks like the Twin Towers in the windows back there. And it's like me walking away from them. And I felt like spiritually that's what I was doing. Because I came out of retirement, quote unquote, because I watched my kids to do that movie because I thought I had a better part. It's got Kevin Bacon in it.
It ties
me even more. Not only do I look like Kevin Bacon, not only can I play 6 degrees, now I'm 0 degrees. So I thought that was all funny in a way. So that's one of the reasons I came out of retirement to do it. But they want to put me as a silhouette. Really pissed me off. It's kind of like what happens to me with everything. I just, whatever. But Logan Lerman, he winds up doing a movie about George Hamilton, the actor. And George Hamilton got his start being an extra in some movie with all this Egyptian shit. And it's just like, you know, this is, and when they film that movie with Renee Zellweger, the movie that he's in, there's a part where this butterfly flies by and she's, the butterfly's just in the scene. It's just happenstance. She's like standing in a garden. In the garden she's standing in when she meets the son and Logan Lerman is the same exact garden that when I'm in that show Young Americans, I walk up the stairs and somebody yells Hamilton. And here's Logan Lerman playing George Hamilton. It's three different movies with Hamilton in it, and two of them takes place at the same spot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just weird. But that's just one. That's how
happens all the time. Have you ever seen Joe Alexander's sync vids?
Yeah, but it's, my point is, it's different when it's you.
Yeah.
If it was Joe Alexander, then I'd go, wow. But I mean, I could sit there all day and look up, you know, try to find. But my point is,
people do that. Like me personally, I stopped talking about personal sync because the thing that about sync to me that blew my mind is I'd already been involved with synchronicity. Like I'd already been seeing synchronicity in my own life and was confused. But when I was so selfish that I never really looked at anybody else's synchronicity. I was so wrapped up. And then I realized that it was happening to everybody. That's when it really blew my mind.
Well, I look at everybody's stuff, so I don't never feel like that guilt that I'm just talking about myself.
Right.
And if anybody ever shares anything with me, I totally go
crazy.
You're
just doing it in reverse. Stuff. We're just two sides of the same coin, in my opinion.
Yeah, but what I'm getting at is like, so I go through the paper and I don't do much acting anymore because I don't know if you ever read the
paper. There is a purpose, though. Is this leading us to that other world that you're talking about?
Yes. This is what I'm getting at. I got to give you the experience, though, is what I'm saying. So I'm going through the city paper and I'm flipping through. And Sean Astin's going to be in town. So here you got Samwise Gamgee's going to be in town, right? Goonies kid. So I'm like, I'm going to go meet him and see what happens. And I know that it's going to be, like you were saying, is this going to be an adventure? Is it going to be? So I'm like, I'm looking at it like a fucking adventure. And I'm like, maybe the fucking Illuminati's watching me at this point. Like, I don't know, because this is right before I went in the mental institution for the second time. And I don't know if you're right about that experience. I mean, the synchronicities were getting so fucking tight that it was insane. And I'm like, they're watching me. They have to know that, like, something's going on and something's fucked up here. Maybe they're bringing him to town to talk to me. Who the fuck knows? I don't even know what I was thinking at the time. I just was, like, totally open to whatever was happening. And usually when I get so many synchronicities from Aleister Crowley and I feel like we got shit locked in the next world, at least in my mind, I'm not worried about what anybody can do to me. Like, not physically, because it doesn't really matter anymore. So I'm like, I'm going to go and let's see what the fuck happens. So I go and I take my camera because my camera's how I get orb pictures of orbs. So I'm taking all these pictures. So I'm already suspiciously weird looking anyway, just in general. Like they could have came after me and freaked me out in the state of mind I was in. So I'm taking these pictures and I usually take pictures of like statues and shit. And I'll try to see where who the statues were later and then see if that was those people's spirit coming through. And this is where I started to experience a lot of spirits, of Skull and Bones members coming through for me. And because there's a lot outside of Hopkins. This was at John Hopkins University. Then later I found out that John Hopkins University is where we shoot the images of Hubble. So all the images you ever see of space are from John Hopkins University here in Baltimore. So that just adds like a whole nother level to it. And the reason I got seeing all these red eyes and all these things via the solar nebula, hourglass nebula, is because it looked like an eye. And Hubble even says it's the eye of the universe on the cover of National Geographic. Now, so this image was shot in John Hopkins, the eye, the Hubble eye, you know, the 80,000 light years away. So that's one of my gods, let's put it that way. So, and somehow I have a feeling like say we're interpreting it subconsciously, and they wind up saying, like, everybody sees this observer eye, and it's really the Hourglass Nebula up in the sky, 80,000 light years away. And maybe it's like that house of gods, you know, where the Earth's another house, you know? And it's like, it's trying to send us the signals, but it's so strong that it gets misconstrued, and they make it out to be Sauron or something evil. And then I go, like, I get it's not evil, and I get that it's actually something good, and everybody's misinterpreted because their comprehension's so, you know, bound to, like, all this quote-unquote reality. So I'm like, fuck it, I'll go, you know. I didn't know all that. I mean, it was like, that was tied together. But I meet Sean Astin. He talks all this political stuff. This is back when I was into politics. I'm no longer into politics. And nobody even listens to any of his political stuff. And he was being real on the fence, just trying to get people involved in politics. It's like four years ago. Okay. So I wind up meeting him afterwards, and I'm the second person in line, I think. And this is when I realized I could just go meet celebrities and then see what happens synchronistically. And sometimes it's scary, is what I'm trying to tell you. It's not like it's going to be simple. Like, you're going to go, you know, Jim Carrey might come to your fucking town next month. Who knows? And you just need to try. If you got the chance, do it. Like, see what happens. But anyway, I start telling him about quantum physics. And I said, because he had mentioned something about quantum physics. And I said, look, I said, I know everybody asked you about Lord of the Rings. I said, but I think some of the stuff you said about politics might actually resonate with them, and they just don't realize it, but subconsciously they got it. And he, and this is Sean Astin, so it's always more interesting when a celebrity says something to me. I don't put them on a higher.
Is it more interesting because they embody the god, or are they wearing the mask of the god when they're on?
However you put it, it's because they're. It's like Violator said, because they're on that silver screen thing, you know.
But when they're not on the silver screen,
and. They're more like how 9/11 resonates a lot. They resonate these archetypes bigger than we can. You know?
Okay, this is it. You know how a sigil, you know what I'm saying, is just words mixed together to make a complete thing? That's the same thing I'm sure that you've experienced with a movie. Like, how many times do you film a scene? Like, sometimes it's like a 25-to-1 ratio. So you film the scene 25 times.
Yeah.
You only use pieces from different edits and stuff, so you consolidate a bigger theme to make something. So all a movie is like a sigil, and everybody who watches it charges it. It's the same thing as your balloons or yada yada yada.
If you get a chance, check out Janis P. Aldridge's thing on the Splinter Test. Okay. And it's listen to this, okay? This is kind of what you're getting at, and kind of where I'm at now too. If we shatter and scatter a hologram, we will realize that each fragment, no matter how small, large, or regular, we will see the whole hologram. This is incredibly significant phenomenon. So you know how that works, right?
Yeah.
You know, if you had an apple and you shattered it, like in the Holographic Universe book, you know, it would still be an apple on the small thing. It would just be less...
be a smaller apple.
Well, you can do the same thing with farts, which is pretty awesome.
What?
When you smell something, you take that into you, and so
that's so fucking
that's gross. Yeah, but listen to this, right? This is kind of interesting. It has always been my personal contention that if we take, for example, a splinter of John Lennon, that splinter will, in a very real manner, contain within it everything that John Lennon has ever experienced, everything that John Lennon has ever said, composed, wrote, drew, expressed. Everyone that ever knew John Lennon in the sum total of all of any of those interactions, everyone who ever heard, read, thought, or saw, reacted to John Lennon or anything remotely connected to John Lennon, even past, present, and or future combination of any of all of these above.
Yeah.
And then they say in magic, this is known as the contagion theory or phenomenon. So what you're kind of saying is like that. It's almost like these sync vids when you put like these little parts of stuff. You're really putting the whole movie in there. And the same with these characters and whatever. I kind of like the idea of what people were saying about like taking Christopher Lloyd as all of his movies and what he winds up being.
Right.
But
it's just a fractal. So you can do it with groups of actors. You can do it with directors. You could do it with. And it's like what you're talking about. That's what we were talking about the other day when I was saying New York is almost like a character in the movie because it has meant so many different things to different people that you almost get that whenever you see it. When you see the New York skyline, it almost gives you chills because it's like a It's like an extra in the movie itself.
But it's like the Big Apple, you know? And yes. It's like when we see 9/11,
we were just talking
about, see just a piece of New York. But my point is, I remember when I did Hamilton, the sun would be shining real bright. And I'd be like, I'd be talking to the sun because I used to worship the sun years ago. And I used to stare at it a lot, too. I think that might have helped charge some of these things I was seeing, too. It trust me, stare at the sun whenever you get a chance. Do it when it's going down or coming up, like the last hour or two. Start out with like one eye, cover the other one. This one guy's been living since 1996 without eating and just drinking and looking at the sun and getting his vitamins. You can look him up, but it's called sun gazing. But anyway, I remember I would look at the sun and I'd go like, "You're the biggest star in almost every movie," and nobody even cares.
That's a good.
Nobody cares. You know?
All lighting comes from the sun, and like every movie set, that's an interesting way of thinking.
But here's my point. I'm going to bring this to like a singularity, and then I'll go back out with it and leave
you.
All
right. Well, look, you're going to bring this to a singularity. We're going to come to a point here, and then I've got to go.
Okay. When so you have like the Tower movie, you know, the eye, all that jazz. So now I kind of look at 16 like the Tower. You know, it's got the eye on top, all that jazz. And I was in a movie where I played a skinhead. It got cut, but it was a Homicide, the movie. It's called The Red Ball Case. And Clark Johnson's in it. He wound up directing some of The Wire. And The Wire, I wind up being in the mental institution that I was originally thrown in, playing a mental patient, going crazy in a mirror. Wow. Okay? Just think how weird that is. And the guy who played Jimi Hendrix is in the scene, too. So there's a whole Jimi Hendrix experience, and this is experience. And wow. Speaking from.
Right.
Now, what happens is Clark Johnson is the one that gives Tom Hanks the skeleton what's that Dungeons and Dragons movie? Mazes and Monsters.
Yeah.
He's, remember the friend that's the medical doctor, and he gives him the skeleton to put in the cave?
Yeah.
So synchronistically, directly connecting me through Clark Johnson, because I was friends with him. He's in that. He's the one who gives, you know, gives Tom Hanks, you know, the skeleton, you know, boo, you know?
Yeah.
So what happens is they bring the steel down on the 10th anniversary. So I'm like, I'm going to go. And I know that no one's really paying attention. And I know that we're all part of the same thing. I don't care if it's Illuminist, you guys, me, the regular people. We're all part of something, you know, and it's bigger than all of us. And my point is I go down there. There's a C on the steel. There's also a 23 on the steel. That's just it just is. I mean, I got pictures of it. So I go, okay. And I mean, the mayor's there. I want to meet the fucking governor of Baltimore. I have a picture of me and the governor of Baltimore. And it's really funny. I have an Anton LaVey pen on my Maryland shirt. It's really small, though. But I just kind of was taking him to just, like, walk that line. I wanted to take – basically what I'm doing is it's like I'm no matter what 9/11 was done for, I'm trying to turn a negative into a positive,
right,
or what people can view as a negative into a positive. And and using it as a consciousness point. But so the two become one with the Baltimore World Trade. I'm done with that. But the way I'm looking at it now is we need to pay attention. This is at least what I'm going to start doing. I'm paying attention to all the towers. You know, it's the same with the King Kong thing that you know, right, with the Empire State Building.
Right.
I think that when we take the tarot card, we need to stop constant. It's not like we're getting away from anything. Nobody's running. We're all kind of truthers in our own right. But my point is, it's not going to do the world any positive to keep going 9/11, 9/11, 9/11, and keep. It doesn't do anything. It's not going to do anything for anything. The world, if they want to throw us in FEMA camps, they're going to throw us in FEMA camps. I mean, I've met, you know, Jesse Ventura and asked him about FEMA camps. I don't know if you guys watched me argue with Graham Hancock and Daniel Penchbeck. I go and I meet even these people that are on that level. I put myself on a lot of different levels, on a lot of different tables, and I put myself out there in a lot of different ways. And if anybody ever wants to come get me, trust me, they do it. And if they want
we're
to,
we're gonna come get you, Christopher.
No, you get what I'm. No, I'm just.
We're gonna
saying.
Have to wrap this up. I need to get. It's 11:11. That's perfect too.
But my point. My point to you would be,
because we couldn't start today on time for some reason.
It's all right. But my point to you would be, if you see me paying attention to all these towers, that's why, because there's more stories to tell and I need to expand. And that's why I'm getting more general with the synchronicity. And that's why
more stories to tell.
But you know what it reminds me of? And I'll tie this to you. And I told you this in the email. When I found the Belly of the Whale blog. I started adding blogs on the side of my blog, and I call them dead blogs that still contain information that I think is good. And I call them the, you know, I should call them the Dead Sea Scroll blogs or something. But I wound up discovering your blog one night when I was just like, nobody's paying attention. Like, this is profound. Shit's crazy. You know, but I realize it's just because I take it there. If anybody can take it there, I really think so. And if you go start going to conventions, meeting celebrities, you could really take it up a bunch of notch. I think it'd be fun. I can't wait for everybody to try it if everybody ever does. But anyway, I was reading it and it was your last post and or the second to last post. And it was like, I saw that pregnant woman on the side and I saw everything you were saying. And I was just like, holy fuck, we're still in the womb, in a sense.
Yeah.
You know? And I realized, I didn't know you were doing the Mask of God. So you discredit yourself a little bit for me. You're not as mystical as you were before. But for a long time, you were like this living mystical God to me. Because I was like, I was like, it's almost like when you read the Sync book and some of these guys put these really vague shit in there, but they have really profound pieces. But you can tell they just, it's like Violator. Talk to Violator one day. Ask him if he wants to do your show. He's going to say, eh,
he did
whatever.
It last week.
No, you know, last week we had Violator.
You know what I mean, though, right? Yeah. I don't have to do it. It's whatever. And he has all these profound synchronicities, but he doesn't give a shit. He really doesn't. But he actually puts meaning to him at all. He just doesn't care.
Everyone cares. We're going to have to go.
Well, I have to go, Chris. It's been a fucking pleasure, man. Thank you for coming on.
This was a blast. This was a good one.
Yeah, hopefully people enjoy it, and I really enjoyed talking to you guys, and I'm sorry we had any bad blood, Will. I'm hoping all that just smooths out, and maybe it's an amalgamation.
I don't think it was nearly as bad as either of us thought it was, so
yeah.
It's all, like, I know I hate to use a cliche, but water under the bridge now, we're on the other side, so.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
All right, gentlemen, have a great day.
Yeah, good talking to you guys.
Later, guys.